like to do it slow. Because I like to think about them, you know. But
it sounds like it's being put on slightly too slow.
No.
Where did you get that?
In the monastery, we do. Every week, or one or two nights a week, in the debate ground, we don't debate. We just pray for the right motivation for 3-4 hours. And it's called Korim. And we do the Heart Sutra like 12 times in a row. Slow, you know. And that's a beautiful custom. I like that.
Is it solid?
Yeah, yeah, beautiful. Oh, it would raise goosebumps on you, you know, to hear it. It's incredible. It starts out really low and slow, and then at the end, it's as high as your voice can reach. So it's a good custom, too. They just don't have any debate, no class, no nothing. They just pray that they're doing it for the right reason. Which is nice. Okay. Tonight we're going to talk about Champa. Who's Champa?
Maitreya.
Maitreya.
Okay. I just guessed. Come on.
Maitreya comes from a word, Mitra. Mitra means friend, loved one. And Maitreya's name means love. Okay. There's two kinds of love in Buddhism, and this is the kind of love that wants other people to have the best. And the other kind of love is the kind of love that wants people to get out of trouble. So this is the one that's this kind of love that wants to give people things, see them be happy. So Maitreya's name is love. He wrote what?
What we studied.
He spoke, actually.
Perfection of wisdom?
No, that's the Buddha. That's Shakyamuni. Yeah, no. You're close. He wrote the Ornament of Realizations, which is what you're studying. So you better get that down in case some lama asks you what you're doing. Okay. He spoke it to whom?
A sangha.
To a sangha. He dictated to a sangha. So Champa wrote this text. He composed this text. At the beginning of the text, he wrote us. There's a rule that at the beginning of a book, you should bow down to some holy object. You should make an offering to some holy object. And the verse he wrote at the beginning of his book was what I just quoted. He wrote this verse, 4 lines. And instead of bowing down to Buddhas or bowing down to Bodhisattvas, he bowed down to the three knowledges, to the three perceptions of selflessness. He bowed down to that. And when he does that, it's supposed to attract people to study the book. They're supposed to think, oh, if I could get this perception of selflessness, I could reach nirvana, I would be happy. And if you've had any taste of this thing this last week, thinking about nirvana, I don't know if you have. I mean, I was thinking about it, you know, what would it be like not to have any irritations the whole day? You know, it's kind of sweet. It's very, very nice. I mean, you get a taste of it when you study it, of what the whole point is. Where do you want to reach? You would still have your body, suffering body, but your mind would be totally clear and happy, and nothing could faze you. You'd never be upset, you'd never have any anxieties, you'd never be worried, you'd never be irritated by anything. And you would love everyone you came across. Well, not necessarily, right? But it would be a very interesting...
Why not necessarily?
Well, let's say you're not maybe you're a Hinaya, but you still have this great love for people. They do have great love. They have great compassion. So
you can have compassion and not love, can you?
You
can have love without compassion.
Compassion is the desire that people be out of suffering, and love is the desire that they get happiness. So I think they pretty much come together. Technically speaking, one comes before the other, and different books say different things. So. Don't worry about it.
Is it the same Maitreya that's going to be the next Buddha?
That's exactly what this whole class is about.
Now, is this bowing down to the three knowledges, is that the ornament of realizations? Or
yeah.
Is that, okay.
Yeah. That is the opening lines of the ornament of realization. And Maitreya is bowing down to that. Now, normally when a person does that, when a person writes a Buddhist book, he's normally doing it for two reasons. One is that, like Dharmakirti, when he wrote his root text on logic, Pramanavartika, he said, Dena dini shengi... What is that? Dena dini shengi duniyamayi... I forgot. Anyway, it goes, I'm not writing this book for anybody else but myself. You know, of course he is, but... So the first reason you write a Buddhist book is to help yourself. And the second reason is to help others. You know, you're trying to get your motivation up for writing or speaking it, and then you're also trying to attract other people to study the book. Now there was this great debate that took place about this subject. And it actually historically took place. It was in... It was in the monastery of Sakya, which is south of Lhasa, and it's still there now. It's one of the few monasteries. The library was not burned. It's maybe one of the only three or four libraries that wasn't burned. And Gyaltsabje, who was Tsongkhapa's, one of his two principal students, went there. In those days, it was a custom to wander around to all the monasteries and debate, just walk in the debate ground and say, okay, let's go. You know, and debate something. And Tsongkhapa himself, the way he got so... One of the reasons he was such a great scholar is that from the age of 8, he started wandering around to debate grounds and debating anyone he could meet. And that's how he learned. So Gyaltsabje was there debating two great Sakya scholars. And they are very great scholars, and we agree that they're great scholars. One of them wrote a 12-volume commentary on this 50-page text. Okay. And they started to get into this debate about who is Jhampa, who is Maitreya. Okay, because when you read sutras, and this is the same thing with Manjushri and the same thing with Avalokiteshvara, in the sutras that you read, they are students of the Buddha. They are bodhisattvas. And yet, in the higher teachings, they're Buddhas. You know, we believe they're Buddhas. So who are they? And I don't know about you, but this used to confuse me all the time. You know, it used to constantly confuse me. You know, why are they asking the Buddha questions if they're Buddhas already? And why is he already there if he's not coming till later? And, you know, it's confusing. So I was happy when we got to this section. It's actually the very first thing you study. I wanted to save it for the last class. This is the last formal class because I think it's the most exciting topic for me. This is the most... This is the one which is, and I'll show you why later. Okay. So the debate was, is Jhampa, it wasn't even if Jhampa was a Buddha or not. It was, does Jhampa have any more, does he aspire anymore? Does he have any state of mind in which he aspires to achieve his to fulfill his own needs? Okay, I'll say it again. Does Jhampa have any state of mind in which he aspires to fulfill his own needs? And the Sakya said no. Mm-hmm.
Which would presume that his needs have not been...
Well, we're talking about that. Okay, the Sakya said no, he doesn't. He does not have any aspiration to fulfill his own needs. By the way, this is the only thing I've ever seen in scripture, or very rarely, of any, what the Western people call sectarian things. Or, you don't see it. I mean, it's very, very rare. You hear about it in the West, you don't hear about it in the... When we debate in the winter, we have Sakyas, we have Gumpos, we have Nimaskagi, we're all debating together. We don't know who's who. And it's good debates. And there's no... Don't think it's like that. It's just, you could have picked anybody. The point is that they're trying to teach us something. The Galupa guy is complaining about the Sakya because they both want to teach us something. They're great, great saints. You don't have to worry about that. So don't think that.
Sack is another sack.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, a lot of Tsongkhapa was a Kagyu. I mean, all our lineage of our practice comes from the Sakyas, and they're very kind. Our practice of Abhidharma comes from the Sakyas. Our practice of Vinaya is probably Kagyu or Nyingma. We don't even know. They don't even know. We have the book. We don't know. Nobody knows who wrote it. It was definitely before the Guru Prasad.
So,
I mean, most of that is Western.
Is there a really major difference between the sects?
There's a difference in the practice.
You know, you're the kind of love.
Okay? And you have to be careful to find the one that fits you and use it and stick to it. It's like a medical treatment. You know, Carolyn can tell you, like, I don't know, this drug might be great, this drug might be great, this drug might be great. Mix them, do 5 different treatments at the same time, it might kill you. You might fail completely. And the traditions are the same. The traditions grew up a certain way, they teach a certain way. It's not good to mix them in the same sense that it's not good to mix medicines. You'll get confused. One will emphasize one thing. One may even present something differently until a certain stage and then tell you the other way. And then you're just going to get confused and you won't be able to practice steadily. It's not good to mix them up. They're all good medicine. They can all get you to great goals. But find the one that suits you well and then commit yourself to it. That's the better approach.
Are we getting one brand of medicine?
You are getting pure Gulupa. When I started this place, I lost about 10 students who were not Gulupa, who came to me for mostly language study. And I said, I'm coming out of the closet. I can't. I didn't wear robes. I wore a business suit. And we went on like that for 8 or 9 years. I'm presenting this one kind of medical treatment, and I believe it's very effective. For me, it's been quite good. It fits my personal nature. If it's good to check out everything, and it's good to carefully look at everything. But then at a certain point, even with medicine, you have to commit yourself to one doctor. You can't follow 3 different doctors' prescriptions or you'll get... Rinpoche says the Tibetan doctors have told me I shouldn't eat fruits and vegetables, and the Western doctors have told me I shouldn't eat sugar and starch, and there's nothing left. So find the one that suits you, and then commit yourself to it, and grow in it, and be happy, and you will be. And mix them up, and you'll get confused, and you'll always be torn, you'll never be quite sure what you're supposed to be doing. So anyway, what I'm saying tonight is not a sectarian thing, it's just a historical debate that went on. And I'm sure, I've seen debates in the monastery where 2 great monks take silly positions to teach everybody there, and the dumb monks there don't realize that it's a game. And they think, oh, he won, he was really smart. And the other guy, after the debate, they say, yeah, well, thanks for taking the opposite position. I needed someone to take the devil's advocate.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, Michael, Yeah, okay.
All right. So, the question was, they said Jampa doesn't have any more aspiration to fulfill his own needs. And so then the debate is, well, are you saying that because you think Jampa is a Buddha? Or are you saying that because you think Jampa is a Bodhisattva? Are you saying that on the basis of believing Jampa is a Buddha? Or are you saying it on the basis of thinking Jampa is a Bodhisattva? Okay. And that's the way the debate starts. And
That's
Gyaltsa Jay
responding. Yeah, response.
The Sakyas say, and again, it's not a sectarian thing, it's just it could have been Mr. A and Mr. B, it doesn't matter. They said he doesn't aspire to fulfill his own needs. And Gyaltsen Jay says, well, I guess you mean either because he's a Buddha or because he's a Bodhisattva. So I'll cover both. I'll prove to you that he does aspire to his own needs. Either way. Okay? So, they say, let's say they say, first of all, that, oh, he's a Buddha, so he doesn't aspire to fulfill his own needs. He doesn't have any intention of fulfilling his own needs. Okay? And then Gyaltsen Jay says, if you say Jampa's a Buddha, then you have a very serious problem. He says, which means Oh, you. I guess you haven't taken much pains to study Mahayana scriptures. This is common. I mean, this is they bait each other, and that's common in the debate. And you see some much hairier ones than that. But here's a man who's just finished writing a 12-volume commentary to a 50-page text, and Gelsip J tells him, "Well, I guess you haven't studied this subject much, because you have failed to distinguish between the system which is shared and the system which is not shared. The teachings which are shared and the teachings which are not shared." And then they know what that means. What does it mean? The shared teachings are the open teachings. Okay? The non-secret teachings. Sometimes they're called sutra. Sometimes they're called the way of the Prajnaparamita. Of the perfections, I should say. The way of the perfections. Okay. You can say either way. You can call them the non-secret teachings. Right. And then the other ones, by the way, why are they shared? Kylie. Why are the open teachings called shared teachings?
Well, you can share them with people who haven't had any special wants yet.
Yeah, and that's one. Mainly, to succeed in the secret teachings, you must study the open teaching. You must be a master of the sutra teaching. You must be a master of all the theory that we've been talking about for the last year or 6 months or whatever. That's why they're called shared. They are necessary for both people who are on the slow track, you know, 210 kalpas, say, or people who are on the fast track, which is one lifetime. But either one, both of them have to study the open teachings. You must understand the three principal paths perfectly, and you must have some experience of them in your heart before you undertake to study the secret teachings. So therefore, those are shared. Those attitudes of the three principal paths are never lost. You must have them in order to succeed at secret teachings, or you'll not only... At the best, nothing will happen. And you can meet people who apparently this is the case with. They've taken dozens of initiations. They've struggled to keep their practice. And maybe they did, maybe they didn't, and mostly they did so-so. But nothing happened. You know, they can't say, you know, they say, did you change any in the last 5 years? I say, no, nothing changed. No, I'm still... I'm not deadly miserable, but I'm not, you know, in bliss either. Just, I'm trying to keep it up every day, but nothing happening much. That's the best. And then the worst is that you try to follow them and you make some big mistake and you do something wrong. And then it hurts you very bad.
What do you mean, not much? And that's the best?
No, what I'm saying is, if you're not prepared... By the teachings which are shared. Yeah, this chair is sick. I'm sorry. I'm going to fix it. My handyman's been out of town. if you're not prepared with the shared teachings, nothing will happen. In fact, the opposite is true. If you do the shared teachings perfectly and you never get any initiation, you'll still have some amazing things happening in your life. So... It's almost as if the opposite is true. So what it means is shared means people studying the secret teachings and people studying the open teachings both share these practices. Which are what? Three principal paths, which are what?
Renunciation.
Sick of this life. You mean no more, you know, like attraction to... you'll get this. I mean, if you don't have it now, I mean, go through your career stage. I went through it, you know. Do it for 10 years. It's attractive. It's exciting. It's stimulating. It's interesting. And you get old, and it wears out. And then at the end, there's nothing to show for it. You know? So there's nothing there. And then the second one is what?
Bodhicitta.
Wish to achieve enlightenment. You know, basically loving every single being you ever meet. You know, as if they were your only child. It's difficult. I mean, it's difficult, but the irony of it being difficult is that it's a very pleasant way to spend your life. You know, it makes you happy. And then thirdly, what?
Correct wisdom.
Yeah, understanding emptiness. Understanding what gave you a headache last week. And if it doesn't, you're not... If it's comfortable, it's not addressing the problem, because the problem you've had, according to the scriptures, for countless years, trillions of years, time without beginning. You know, if breaking a habit that old were easy, you know, it wouldn't give you a headache. So
these are the three paths somebody who has open teachings has.
These are the paths of the open teachings. These are the shared paths. This is the way which is shared. These are the guts. This is what it all boils down to. Every practice in Buddhism can be included in one of these three.
So that means if somebody does not have any of those three,
If he doesn't have a good, we call kohachapa, is the minimum. Kohachapa means he must have a good understanding of the principles of the
Buddha. Okay, so it doesn't have to have necessarily bodhicitta,
but
understanding.
No, not necessarily, but he should have a very clear picture in his mind. Kohachapa means he should have a good theoretical background in the three principle paths. It's not even necessary that he have the true renunciation, but he should understand its benefits, he should understand what will happen, he should understand everything about it. That's what kohachapa is. That's a requirement for the teachings which are not shared, which is Tantra. Yeah.
That's related somewhat with that gross question. Mm-hmm. You know, you said it takes 210 kalpas.
That's the pretty good fast. That was Shakyamuni's time.
Is that because it's as a causal path, you have to basically create the cause with every individual you meet throughout your life?
Oh, no, not like that. No. It's just that the purification of yourself takes that long. Mm-hmm. To meet the teacher who teaches you the right thing and then to practice it and then... That's after he determined to do it. So, but
how long does it take to understand those things?
I think it depends on what stage you're at. So anyway, Gyaltsebje says to Shamuk Drenpa, he says, well, if you say Maitreya is what?
A Buddha,
then you fail to make a distinction between... The shared teachers and the secret teachers. The shared and the teachings which are shared, mm-hmm. and the way which is not
shared.
He's
a debater, right?
And he's talking about the secret teachings and the open teachings. He's talking about sutra and tantra.
Michael, did you say who he is? Gyaltsebje, is that
something Gyaltsebje is the Galupa who was debating. In fact, he's right here. And Kedupje. He's at the right side of Tsongkhapa because Gyaltsab means region, and he was the first holder of Tsongkhapa's throne.
And who's on the other side?
Kedupje. So Gyaltsebje was a real master of logic.
Can you write this down for us?
Kedupje was a great master of Tantra, actually. You want his name? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. You hit it when I do that, right? And we still have, I mean, the holder of that throne is still, that custom is still going on. In fact, I believe Kedupden Dagi held that throne. The author of the text.
This is the same thing as being the head of the Galupa order?
It is. Dalai Lama is not the head of the group, the Ganden Chiba. He's the holder, because Ganden is his monastery. That was his home monastery. Anyway, so he says, if you say Maitreya is a Buddha, then you fail to distinguish between the secret teachings and the open teachings, because we are here in the... What's the ornament of realizations?
Open
teachings. Okay. So what's the implication? In the open teachings, Maitreya is a bodhisattva. Because he said to the Sakyas, if you say he's a Buddha, you've failed to distinguish between mm-hmm. when we're talking secret and when we're talking open. Because when we're talking open, it's not a, the implication is he's not a Buddha.
Well, he's even referred to as Bodhisattva, at least Avalokiteshvara is.
Yeah. The by the way, the...
In the sutra.
The proof of it, the proof the next step in the proof in the text is, why is he a Bodhisattva? There's a couple of reasons, okay? This won't be on your homework, but just for your knowledge, okay? He wrote another book called the Uttara Tantra, which is not Tantra, it's an open text. Maitreya did. And in that text he says, this is being written so that I can purify myself of my shidus, my obstacles to omniscience, okay? Which implies that which means he's not a Buddha. Because it means he's on the 8th, 9th, or 10th path. He happens to be at level. He happens to be on the 10th level. So according to the open teachings, he's in 10th level Bodhisattva. Not only that, he's a Seichik Topa, which means he's got one life to go. Within one life, he will become a fully enlightened Buddha.
A person who knows his secret teachings is a Buddha? Not necessarily, right?
Excuse me?
A person who knows...
it doesn't refer to his knowledge. In the whole tradition of the secret teachings, Maitreya is a Buddha. He's already a Buddha. And in the open teachings, he's a 10th level Bodhisattva. Why? Because it states that in another work of his. That's one good reason. It states that I am writing this work in order to rid myself of my shooters.
So is that chronological, where he was a Bodhisattva, and then he had the one life, he went through it, and became a Buddha, and then the secret teachings, he's now a Buddha?
No. Chronological. According to the secret teachings, he's been a Buddha for a long time. There was a point at which he was a 10th level Bodhisattva. But now he's, according to the secret teachings, he's been a Buddha for a long time.
So he's referred to as the Buddha.
He's the coming Buddha.
Future Buddha.
That's another point.
In which teaching? Sutra.
Sutra. He will be the next Buddha of 1,000 Buddhas to appear.
When?
When, when he goes from Tushita to Ogmin and achieves the Dhamma body, and then goes back to Tushita and sends a Manakaya down to planet Earth. Yeah. Now, when is that going to happen?
Yeah. Soon.
Were you speaking with the open hat or the non-open hat? You were speaking with the open
hat. They know the process through which he will go. You don't have to learn that. But the point is that he has yet to undertake those very high processes that you can even only imagine in which he reaches the final thing of becoming a Dharmakaya, achieving his Dharmakaya. So right now he's in Tushita.
Okay,
what's Tushita?
It's a kind of a paradise. It's actually the paradise of this Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha.
I'm sorry, I don't understand your main point. I have written down, maybe I missed something. Say, if Jampa is a Buddha, then they can't be distinguishing between Sutra and Tantra because he wrote the Ornament of Realization.
Right, no. Because he wrote another book, it's the sister book of the Ornament of Realization.
Oh, because
and in that book he said, I'm a 10th level Bodhisattva. I'm writing this book in order to purify myself.
So that's the reason.
That's one of the reasons. Yeah. That's one reason why in the open teachings he's a Bodhisattva.
But isn't it also that he's actually explicitly referred to it? Is he explicitly referred to as a Bodhisattva the way Avalokiteshvara?
He is, and you'll see there's a quotation that is in your reading, where the Buddha tells, there's a scripture that says, the Buddha is telling someone, oh, don't ask me that question, go ask Maitreya, that Bodhisattva who is on the 10th level and has one more life to go, go ask him. So that's another proof that he's a Bodhisattva, according to this teaching,
so
according to the open teachings.
And so how do you reconcile those two different positions?
This is a mystery which I can't get into. I mean, you can.
What about with logic?
We'll talk about it. Nice. We'll get to it. Tonight we'll get to it. See, I didn't say next year.
Have you just answered the question? Why would the Buddha decide to call someone a Bodhisattva if he was a Buddha?
Oh.
In other words, that's also to come?
It's very, very common for the Buddha to not say what's really the case if it would help people. That's normal procedure. That's why there's four schools. He did teach the four schools. He did teach Abhidhamma. You know, Abhidhamma is contradictory to Madhyamika. Yeah.
Why do we need to distinguish?
Well, we're getting there. I'm gonna get to the point of why we're even talking about this.
Have to finish all these things tonight.
So the Sakyas say to Gyaltsev Jay that he has no intention of fulfilling his own needs, aspiration to fulfill his own needs. And then Gyaltsev Jay says, why, are you thinking he's a Buddha? Is that why you're saying he has no aspiration to fulfill his own needs? Okay. By the way, we never hear what they really think. Actually, I went and looked it up. But if you say he's a Buddha, then you're just on the wrong track. You're in the wrong system. This ain't secret teachings. We're talking open teachings. We're talking the person who wrote the Abhisamankara, the ornament of realizations. So why, if that's why you think he doesn't have any intention of fulfilling his own needs, then you're just wrong. You shouldn't have brought it up. You're in the wrong.
Wait,
you know, we're talking open teachings.
Why does having written the ornament of realization prove that he isn't a Buddha?
Because it's the open teaching.
It's open teaching. Buddha teaches
open teachings.
That's true too.
Why does that prove that he
isn't? It's a shastra.
What's a shastra?
You can divide all teachings of Buddhism into shastras and sutras, which is another meaning. I didn't want to get into it. But anyway, a person who writes, you can call it a commentary. Muntou Kien is a commentary written by a human being, by a non-Buddha. It's up there. It's in the Tengyur. It's in the whole section of books written by non-Buddhists. It's accepted to be an open teaching. And the Kangyur is written by a Buddha. That's the difference between the two big collections of scripture. So it is an open teaching.
Well, being an open teaching doesn't necessarily make it
that the author is not a Buddha. But an open teaching which is in the Tengyur, which is written by non-Buddhas, which it is...
So what he really said was, you don't know the difference between Sutra and Tantra because... He didn't say that.
He said, you shouldn't have brought it up. If you're saying he has no aspiration to fulfill his own needs because you think he's a Buddha... You can't bring it up in this class. We're not talking open teachings. We're talking... What he's trying to say is, only in the secret teachings is Maitreya said to be a Buddha. What he's telling the Sakya is, look, I understand that Maitreya is a Buddha, and you understand that Maitreya is a Buddha, but you can't talk about that right here. According to the open teaching, he's a Bodhisattva.
So nowhere in any of the open teachings does it say he's a Buddha.
There's a debate about that, too, but not really. No defensible, right? Some people say the Lotus Sutra says something like that, but it's not. You can't prove it. Okay.
So, then what he said was, if you're saying he's a Buddha, it's because you don't know the teachings, because in the open teachings, he's said to be a Bodhisattva.
If you say he's a Buddha, right?
Yeah.
You've done something inappropriate. You've brought up the secret teachings in a debate in which we are restricted to the open teachings. And in the open teachings, it's never said that he's a Buddha, and it's said in many places that he's a Bodhisattva.
Okay.
When you're in an open teaching debate, stick to the open teachings. Do not bring up Tantra.
Michael?
You've failed to distinguish between what's an open teaching and what's a secret teaching. You fail to actually distinguish between the appropriate time to talk Tantra and the appropriate time not to talk Tantra. Yeah.
The way you're saying, because he's stated that he's a Bodhisattva, therefore he's not a Buddha, maybe some of the people in the class might think that either you're a Bodhisattva or a Buddha. Isn't it the case that Buddhas are also Bodhisattvas?
I'm talking... Flunk your file.
Attain wisdom for the sake of...
Buddha.
For the sake of...
Total Buddha. And...
The sake of helping...
Yeah,
the benefit of all beings.
Those two. Those two things. Now, Gyaltsabje says, okay, suppose I let you say my transcendental. Okay. Which, you mean to tell me that the definition doesn't fit here? He doesn't have any desire to fulfill this, to reach total enlightenment? They'll say, of course he wants to reach total enlightenment. He wants total enlightenment. We should say that maybe. What is total enlightenment? What are the two bodies? You guys had it in the first class.
Oh, that changes it considerably by dropping out the reach.
I know. I got out of that one before I got in trouble, and no one said anything. What are the two bodies of a Buddha?
The form body and the wisdom body.
Yeah. I mean, you can say Dharmakaya and Rupakaya. The Dharma body and the form body. The form body is mainly for who? For others or for himself?
For others.
It's mainly for others. I mean, the reason he appears on the planet Earth, he is not for his benefit. That's the fulfillment of others' needs.
All form bodies? Yeah. Or is there a special one form body that's not necessarily for that?
There is a Chokutuku. And in fact, I read it tonight and I thought of you. Because they said, it said, are you saying that the ultimate Nirmanakaya doesn't appear as, always appear as a Buddhist monk? And it said, no, I'm not saying that, Which implies that it's true.
Isn't there a third body, Sambhogakaya?
You can make three bodies, you can divide it into four bodies. Okay? We're not going to go that far. Those two divide into two each.
So Sambhogakaya is part of Dharmakaya?
That's part of the Rupakaya. That's part of the form body. There are two form bodies. There are two bodies that can be seen. One is the body he sends down to Earth. And one is the body that he lives in his paradise.
He lives in a form body in his paradise.
Yeah, he has form in his paradise. He has color in his name. You can see him. If you're a 10th level bodhisattva, you can talk to him. And that's what he looks like in his own paradise. But when he comes to planet Earth, he looks like a monk. He has these long ears. He has a top knot.
The emanation body is sort of plural, right? I mean, he can emanate.
Well, we distinguish between the ultimate emanation and the other emanations. He can emanate as a bridge, as a tree, as the guy.
But he
in the
can
bus.
Also emanate as a number of different things simultaneously.
He always does.
Right.
Yeah.
Which are you talking about, ultimate?
What I said was that all his form bodies are mainly fulfilling others' needs. Okay. And then what can you say about his Dharma body?
Fulfilling his own needs?
It's fulfilling his own needs. To get a Dharma body is to fulfill your own needs.
How so?
Okay. No more suffering, no more nothing. Omniscience. The Dharmakaya has omniscience. And it's Nyumdib Malupa Pambe Sosa Tango. It's the definition of Nirvana also. So he's gotten rid of all obstacles. So that's really all you need. The rupaka, the form, taking form is mainly for the benefit of others because you can
help
teach them.
So,
hi guys, have you been a Buddha that is not oriental?
You can be very effective.
Sure.
How come whenever we see pictures of Buddhas, it's always oriental?
Oh, wait 100 years or so. I mean, Jesus, you ever see his pictures? He looks like a nice Caucasian white guy, you know? He would probably look like Yasser Arafat, frankly. You know, seriously. So
what does it prove?
What I'm saying is, you know, stick around for a while. The pictures would say.
So what you're saying is, were it not for the compassion of a Buddha, they wouldn't need nor have any kind of form body at all?
Mainly. But this, we always say mainly.
Or is it
it's not the only
or
reason?
Or is there no such being that has no
the,
kind of
the name
form
of his
body.
Body is Longche Peku, which is, you know, enjoyment body. He's enjoying himself in that body. So, anyway.
I don't see where you can claim that omniscience isn't directly linked with helping others. It's the key to effectively helping others.
It is, but it's not described as the fulfillment of others' benefit because it can't communicate with others. And that's why the first step in the Lam Rim is what? I think we'll do a Lam Rim course next time. By the way, we are going to do a Lam Rim course. Did I tell you that? We're going to do the next course, which will start in mid-February, will be meditation. And we'll do meditating, but we'll study the real way to do it. You know, it's a long book, it's very interesting, it's precisely how to do it. and then we'll meditate on is the outline of the Lama Nichemo, the great Lama. Because if you have those two things, you can spend a nice life.
It's a
Shinyin Denso, respecting your teacher, how to take yourself to your teacher, how to find a teacher, and then how to learn from him properly. And that's necessary because he's the only liaison between you and the Buddha's omniscience. So he might as well be a Buddha, even if he's not. I mean, that's the argument. That's the only way you can communicate. That's the only window you have, the only door you have to the Buddha's omniscience. So be careful with that door. You know, if that door gets lost, then you have no... The Buddha has no way of communicating to you. So it's mainly the form body. Anyway, that's the way it's described. So now, when you aspire... What was the first part of bodhicitta? To aspire to attain Buddhahood. And what is Buddhahood? The two bodies. So, you're aspiring to fulfill your needs and other needs because you're aspiring to the two bodies.
Well, if that's the way it's
universal. So Gyaltsen Jay says, no, and everybody accepts that the Buddha is made up of two bodies.
Right.
And everybody accepts that the definition of bodhicitta is that you're aspiring to achieve total enlightenment.
Yeah.
So, says Gyaltsen Jay to the Sakyas, are you inventing some new kind of bodhicitta where you don't want to reach the two bodies? Why? Oh, because you're positing a bodhicitta in which you don't care about reaching your own needs. Now, why did he talk about fulfilling your own needs?
Why do you need bodhicitta if you've already got it?
Because you have to want the two bodies.
Well,
I'll say it from two.
Why do you need to want them?
I can imagine two reasons why these Sakyas are making this argument. One is that they feel what you just said. Look, if you've already got the two bodies, what's the sense of aspiring to the two bodies? And isn't bodhicitta...
And if you're not in danger of losing them, what's
unnecessary at that point? Then what's the use of aspiring? Where's the wish come in? You don't wish for something you already have. I can see that might be one argument.
Yeah.
And the other argument would be, what was the other argument? He must be so noble he doesn't care about himself. You know, is that what they're trying to say? I can imagine two... I think there are two flavors here. One is they're saying he's already achieved Buddhahood. Why should he aspire to it? And the other argument might be, well, he's so selfless, motivated. He doesn't need. He has no wish to get anything for himself.
He's already got it. He's already achieved all of it.
That's true.
Maybe you need to hold on to that wish to hold your stasis.
But no, because you can't fall.
Well, there's a lot of arguments, okay? One is that... Who wrote this definition of bodhicitta?
The Buddha.
No.
The Buddha.
Senge Pani, Shenden Chi, Yana Zabi Chanta Tu. Where's that from? It's from the Abhisamangkara. Who wrote it? Who wrote the jewel ornament? The ornament of the
Buddha.
This is a Buddha describing bodhicitta. This is a Buddha defining bodhicitta, and he's not defining general bodhicitta, he's defining bodhicitta.
Well, wait a minute, that's an open petition,
Michael. He's not
Buddha,
he's Bodhisattva. He's Bodhisattva defining bodhicitta, so it makes sense that he would define it as
And then in the next line he says, Deyan sase dawame, which means, I'm going to divide now bodhicitta into more categories, and the last three are the bodhicitta that Buddhas have. So he defines bodhicitta as wanting to fulfill your own needs and as wanting to reach Buddhahood. He says all bodhicitta has that, and then he says Buddhas have this bodhicitta. So Maitreya himself has said that. Maitreya has said that Buddhas have bodhicitta. And in the same breath he said, half of bodhicitta is the wish to become total enlightened.
Well, how many of them are
out there
total?
What?
Wishes, different types of...
Yeah, I think you... Deon says a dollar machine.
Well, maybe can you give us...
22, I think it is.
Can you give us the three?
I think it's 22. I'll check it for you.
Huh? Just make it.
Yeah, I will. That's in my baby list. I used to know it. Okay, so anyway, I leave you with that. That's all I can say. It appears to be, I mean, the bottom line, okay, my teacher would never tell me these things. It seems to me that a Buddha never loses his desire to be a Buddha. And that's, I think, the point. He never loses his wish to fulfill his own needs as well as other needs. He never loses his wish to fulfill both the needs.
Even after his
Even after his have been fulfilled
one.
And the others have been fulfilled.
Well, that's not going to be for a long time yet. Are you using that in the sense that once you've achieved that, they're fulfilled whether others partake of that or not?
I don't say for that reason, but apparently he has fulfilled others' needs completely already.
Well, has the ability to, if others are avail themselves.
Yeah, so you have to chew, right? Okay. I won't resolve it for you, and I can't. Okay. I don't think there's any... I think this is something you have to think about.
It would help to know more about the nature of a Buddha.
That we will reach in the eighth chapter. We're in the first chapter. Mm-hmm.
So basically what you're saying is that bodhisattvas are two kinds, non-Buddhas and Buddhas, because they even Buddhas have
people
not
have
stopped the aspiration to fulfill the needs of self and others.
Yeah, that's true, but normally in Tibet and in the books, bodhisattvas is as opposed to a Buddha. A person who has bodhicitta is not a... They're both people who have bodhicitta. It's just normally Changchu Senla is as opposed to Sangya. They're different. They are exclusive classes.
Even though they both have the characteristic
what makes
that
them
makes
charges.
A person a bodhisattva.
Right.
Yeah. On page 5 of my notes you said, therefore there exist Buddha and non-Buddha bodhisattvas.
I don't think so. It's not... Technically, they both have bodhicitta. Technically, it's bodhicitta that makes you a bodhisattva. But in practice and in the teachings, they are just... When you say bodhisattva, you mean a sentient Buddha. And when you say... And a Buddha is not a sentient Buddha.
So would you summarize your main...
And then we'll take a break. Now we'll take a break. The point is this. And we still didn't cover the second part, which was what? Maybe they're making this argument because they think Champa is a
bodhisattva.
We hadn't gotten to that yet.
But he just said bodhisattva in the previous argument, but he was a bodhisattva, according to the open.
Yeah, but what they're saying is your argument is wrong, even if he's either. To say that he has no wish to fulfill his own needs is wrong, whether you think he's a Buddha or whether you think he's a bodhisattva. That's the idea. So we've covered the first part. What? Even if he's a Buddha, he still has the desire to fulfill his own needs. It's not like noble to ignore your own needs. And you never lose the desire to fulfill your own needs.
And the reason why he has the desire to fulfill his own needs is because he has the two bodies, one of which fulfills his needs.
Yeah, because he has a desire for Buddhahood, total enlightenment, which has two parts. And one of them is fulfilling his own needs. He has, because bodhicitta is defined as wanting to reach total enlightenment. Total enlightenment means to the two bodies. One of those two bodies is the fulfillment of his own needs. He still wants it. Can you still want something after you've already got it? Can you still aspire after you have the thing? That's where we are. I have difficulty too. It's a difficult concept.
Not only that, but the whole concept of the Buddha as a being of, for lack of a better way of expressing it, simultaneity.
Mm-hmm.
That anything that has the concept of reaching for, retaining, just disappears. Because there's no...
Well, yeah.
Yes, because there's no,
So he doesn't have mental functions anymore.
No, he doesn't.
Every mind has mental functions.
He doesn't have a conceptual mind, and if it's not a concept, I don't know what it is.
Well, no, desires. Well, that's a pretty good thing. Let's think about it while we eat. That if you can't get out of a debate.
Then you eat.
Boy.
You can fight them for
if the Buddha has achieved permanently the atonement that needs,
And others, but
just isolated to their own, right? And that's
the matter.
And they're omniscient, so therefore they're fully aware of that fact. Then they're playing some kind of game with themselves to continue to aspire to something that they know they've achieved, let's say, a cessation about.
I think it's involved with never losing
with no water to wash it down.
No pleasure.
I think you can say that they never lose those feelings. And you can say, maybe you feel more comfortable. I have a problem with it too. Often many people have had. Maybe it's that they still want to.
There's a very expensive one that I found on sale at Century 21. Sometimes you can find.
I mean, that doesn't allow people to distinguish between once somebody reaches that
level. The store downtown. I think there are a couple of branches in them. It's a discount store, and they have really. Sometimes they have really good lingerie. Among clothes, cosmetics, everything.
They don't deny that it's fine.
I know, and it's wearing out, and I'm like sewing up the little holes, trying to keep it going for another year.
To do something that can't be done. You can't do it. If you've already done it, you cannot achieve it anymore. It's been achieved. So how can you aspire to do something?
No, I agree. That I agree.
Non-dual.
You can't aspire.
You can't
aspire to be
an expert. Can I say that there's a difference between aspiring and wanting?
Why can't you just want to?
Aspire indicates you have not achieved something.
This is my problem. I agree with you.
Everybody's like, fine. Yeah. Every part of you is great. Okay, all right.
Why would it be wrong to say that he doesn't have any wish to fulfill his own needs if he's only a bodhisattva? If he's only a 10th level bodhisattva.
Because they haven't been fulfilled yet completely.
That's pretty simple, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you can also say, because obviously, if he's a 10th level bodhisattva, he has...
he has the wish to fulfill.
Which is defined in... Half the definition is he wants total enlightenment. Total enlightenment means with two bodies. One of the two bodies is the fulfillment of his own needs. So if he wants the two bodies, he wants to fulfill his own needs.
Can you also say, by definition, bodhicitta is the want to alleviate... That's the definition of bodhicitta.
So if you say he's not interested in his own needs because he's Mahayana or because he's bodhicitta, that's obviously wrong. Why? I mean, because he's bodhisattva. Because he has bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is to want to fulfill his own needs.
By definition.
It's not contradictory to want to reach happiness yourself and to want to reach it for other people. It's not contradictory. It's in fact quite... My first Lama used to say, well, when you plant corn, you get weeds. You know, don't worry about your own needs. You're going to get them. You know, working for other people, everything you want, you'll get. Even in the world. Even in a worldly sense. So
how do the weeds relate to that?
The weeds are what things you want. And the corn is what things other people need. So if you work for other people's needs, you're going to get your own by accident anyway. I mean, by the way...
Well,
you can't avoid it. You will get everything you want. Now, last thing tonight. There's a point in the debate where somebody says, well, I don't know why you're talking about secret teachings, because the open teachings don't accept the secret teachings. Alright? And that might be, I don't know about you. No, they didn't, it's not a sakyas. It's just somebody says. Okay? Somebody says, how can you prove that the secret teachings are valid? They're not even mentioned in the open teachings. And this is, I don't know if about you, but I mean, this is a big question. You know, this is...
Only for those who are only part of the open teachings.
Yeah, right. Well, mainly you see the question coming from them, but you say, well then, you know, can you prove that Tantra exists? If you restrict yourself to the open teachings, yes, you can. And he gives two quotations. One is from the brief commentary, which is Hari Bhadra. Hari Bhadra says, he mentions the secret teachings. And he says, this is also valid for the other side of the teachings, meaning the secret teachings. So that's in your reading. So if anybody ever asks you, where does it say, Hari Bhadra is accepted as the greatest commentator on prasanga on the jewel of realizations. So you can't say that no one ever mentioned it. And then there's another, the one I like the best, and somebody asked me why I talk about all this stuff tonight. To me, it's the closest thing to my heart. This is what I wanted. I was assigned this debate for my pre-Geshe debate. This was the one I had to research. You have to write a debate, you have to write a flow chart of every possible objection by your opponent, and you put it in tiny letters, and someone writes it on a scroll, a professional, what do you call this, calligrapher, writes it on a scroll, and you hang it on your door, and you memorize it for 3-4 months. You memorize every possible answer. The opponent's only allowed to say yes or no. It's a real computer flowchart, you know. But if he says yes, I have to go this way. If he says no, I have to go this way. So you have to memorize every possibility. And you have to have a scriptural quotation for every possibility. So I had to have one for this point. And a text had mentioned that Dharmakirti, okay, had mentioned, they say Tantra exists because the miracles described in Tantra exist. Because Dharmakirti, in his book called Commentary on Logic.
Commentary on what?
On logic. Of all things. He gives a defense of Tantra. He says this is why Tantra, the Tantra exists, and this is why it works. And it's, I was very happy to see that. I mean, Dharmakirti is accepted. He's Dodepa. I mean, half of his book is Hinayana. Okay. And he's accepting Tantra.
So what is that reasoning as to this is what it is and why it works?
So I put it in your reading just because I thought you might like to see it. Where's your reading? Try about page 4, I would guess. Nope. How about page 3? 3, there's that little verse at the bottom. Do you have one, Kelly? Do you?
Mm-hmm.
You're right? Okay. So it says, this is from the commentary on valid perception. That is his commentary on logic. That's Dharmakirti, who is writing from a Hinayana viewpoint and a Mahayana. He's mixing. So he says, there do exist the ones who know the Tantra and canon cases use the secret words with success. These are the proof. These are the proof. You don't have to worry about it. But he's proving that holy words have causes. He's debating someone who says that the word Om, the holy word Om, is uncaused. So you don't have to worry about it. Those are the proof. It's mainly the power of the one who taught it and following his precepts. So it's very interesting. Dharmakirti not only says that Tantra exists, he says if you want a miracle, which, you know, you can say the miracle, it's not just flying in the sky or something like that, which happens to be the miracle he's talking about, but you could say a miracle of reaching a diamond body in this life before you die, of reaching paradise in this life before you die. Okay? He's saying it depends on two things. The Tantra must have been taught by a very holy being. And then what's the second requirement? What's the last line say?
To follow his precepts.
you have to obey the rules of that Tantra.
You don't have to be a monk then? Oh, no.
Not at all. Tantra was designed for non-monks. Tantra was designed for business people in India.
Business. And we want to say we want to learn Tantra because we want to reach the diamond body in this life.
Well, which brings me to a new subject. I mean, I want to say, let me say this before, in case I die in between.
What?
I asked him if we did a third course about the Lama, you know, the outline of the Lama and everything, meditating, do you think that this group could take an initiation in the summer, because he often gives one in the summer, and
for
Tantra. And he said, bring me a list. And then I said, well, if we bring your list, can that group of people then come and request that we get that initiation? He said, okay. So I don't think he would agree to have us come en masse and ask if he intended to say no. So, you know, so let me work out the details with him. But if
do we have to ask three times?
Well, if he says no, we better stay there. I mean, it's happened and we stuck there. We didn't move.
You mean physically did not move?
But it's this. It's like, it's a very ambitious thing to do, but it's the timing in his life. His health is not good, and I think it's important. You know, and I think it's, you've had what Kolachakpa, what I mentioned earlier, you've had the minimum already.
Well, but if he does it in the summer, there's still there's maybe still one or two.
So, I mean, technically speaking, it's only permission to study it. It's only permission to start. And then we do it at your own. But it really is something that we should do if we can.
Yeah.
You know, somebody, when he first taught this 15, 20 years ago, I remember we were in Virginia, somebody raised their hand and said, well, I heard if you don't keep it, you go to hell. And he said, well, at least when you get to hell, you can brag, you know. He said, I'm not here because I murdered somebody. I'm here because I broke my tongue.
Before
you take a vow, can you find out what it is? Is this why you
know?
No. So, but what happens if you say...
Let's talk about it. I mean...
Maybe this is going away from the subject.
Well, basically it's this. I mean, basically what's being offered is some special practice which will succeed if it was taught by a holy being, which it was. And if you follow the practice, which is always the failure point, you know.
Well, what about preliminaries?
We'll talk about it. I mean, if you think about it, tell me next week or whatever, who's interested, and then let me talk to Rinpoche, because this is not something I can do on my own. I have to ask him.
No, I mean in terms of people having taken refuge in Bodhisattva.
Well, that I'd like to also see if people are interested. Tell me next week that I would like to ask him to give us the vows. Most of you have probably already had refuge vow and bodhisattva vows, but I think it'd be nice to take them. I'd like to take them again, and I think it would be a sign of our intelligence if after studying it we said, well, now we realize we didn't keep it so good and we didn't really know what we were doing, and how about if we take it again? I think that would be wonderful. So if you think about it, then let me know next week. Maybe we'll take it. I don't want to announce it in class and raise hands and then you feel like, well, I better raise my hand. You know. And maybe you tell me privately. Don't forget, because I'm very senile.
About the tantra.
About both. You know, would you like to go down before the end of December and take refuge vows and bodhisattva vows? Which, I mean, His Holiness taught it in Arizona. I don't know who people were there, but you were there. People were all nervous, you know, and they said, well, I don't know if I should do it. Or I was like, just do it.
That's not true. He said no.
He thought about it carefully.
Yeah.
And somebody said, if I'm a Christian, can I take them? Mm-hmm. He thought about it for 2 days, and he said, yeah, I don't see any problem.
If a person is a Christian, it takes both of them.
No, she said the group was Christian.
It wasn't that... It wasn't that easy. I mean, there was a big discussion, and he clarified it over many points. But he, in the end, he said, yeah, I don't see a record. Yeah.
It says in here it's mainly the power of the one who's taught. Is that, am I understanding it correctly, that the reason that it works is because you're receiving some, because of the quality of your teacher and the empowerment from your teacher?
Don't think of it so much as the power of the one who taught it, but concentrate on the word mainly. Because it's what in Buddhist logic we call a mayinga. By saying mainly, you imply what?
There
it's not enough. I mean, concentrate on that part. Oftentimes in Buddhist scripture, they say it's mainly this because they want you to concentrate on on the other part.
They're saying
it's mainly the power of the other person, which is to say, in Buddhist scripture, once you get used to Buddhist scripture, is to say, but by God, if you don't do the right thing, forget it. If you don't, from your side, fulfill your commitments, you might as well forget it.
And a majority portion of that is the power of the person.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is that...
That's not enough, and you have to do your part, too.
The reason they say mainly is not to emphasize him. It's the unspoken emphasis on you.
So does it mean like more than 50% mainly?
Yeah, but it means... What I'm trying to say is don't concentrate on that aspect of it. Concentrate on the aspect that when I say it's mainly the Lama's power, then you should think, well, why does he say mainly? What else is necessary?
Yeah. And which is your own practice and understanding. Yeah.
And you're following the commitments.
Yeah.
Keeping the commitments. And then the results are I tell you and then we stop. This is a very holy place to stop. This, our last formal class, which is if things are empty, as we've said, if the guy at work is empty, if he truly has no nature of his own, then, and if what you see in him is forced on you by your past deeds, by your karma, then is there any karma which you can collect in this life before you die to see that person as a Buddha, you know, to be in paradise? You know, is it possible to collect such a powerful karma in this life before you die?
To see the other person as a Buddha?
To see the whole world as something unusual. You know? Is there such a karma? And I'm not talking about pretending that the world is this. I'm talking about collecting the amount of karma that the world would become that.
But aren't you then, almost?
Well, what I'm saying is that it's the fact that we've been going over and over and over and over about the asshole at work. That and his emptiness that makes tantra feasible. And that's all. Good night. Our next class is a review.
Yeah.
We don't have a class.
Not
for
on
some
the
reason, not on Monday.
No. You said
you have a prayer or something?
Don't you have confession?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, okay, all right. That's good. No class on Monday. Next class.
No class on
Monday. On this coming Monday. The next class of us is Thursday.
A week
and then
today,
your final is...
The 20th.
The week after that. By the way, on the night of your final, there will be another class going on the and I want you to close your ears, okay?
I know. Are you teaching tomorrow night at Amy's house?
Yeah. We're doing Friday night if you want to come. We've reached the actual death meditation on Friday nights.
You said in the beginning when you started this series that you know you were going to explain how and why tantra work.
I just did. That's all. If
miracles
emptiness
are
is
possible.
True, and I just told you that. I mean, Dhammakirti says that's the two things required. You have to have an authentic tantra from an authentic source. And then from your side, you must follow it strictly.
And it works because things are empty.
And then it will work because things are empty. If things weren't empty, you couldn't even brush your teeth. I mean, it's a fact. Nothing would change. If your teeth were, you know, like mine, self-existently yellow, then you could never make them white.
Have you tried into play?
Okay, here you go.
Yeah, help me with this one. I'll
do it
this time.
You gotta start low.
Thank you.
Happy and rejoice about what you do, because there's 250 million people in this country who's worrying about these things which are inevitable, you know, death and the loss of all your possessions and the loss of your health and your youth. Who, first of all, who even is even aware that it's going, that it's flying by and that they're falling off the waterfall of health and your youth. Who, first of all, who even is even aware that it's going, that it's flying by and that they're falling off the waterfall. And then, secondly, who has anything that they can do about it? You know? So rejoice that you're doing it. And then really take upon some kind of intention in the future that you conduct your own classes like this. And that's the idea. So that you know, don't be lazy for me, you know. I mean, be not lazy for your future students, you know, and look at it that way, and don't lose that intention to do that in the future. It doesn't have to necessarily be, I hope it is in a room like this, but it could also be people at work. I mean, people at Andean, you know, we flirted with Buddhism for many years with just people we're sitting next to at work, you know, and you don't start saying, oh, Dharmakaya, you know.
You said, you know, you should start like that. Do we have homework?
Oh, sorry. Oh.
Can we do the homework?
Just walk up to your boss and say, excuse me,
But you know, in many ways, it really works, because I deal with a friend of mine, actually. I don't know if she's friend anymore. But anyway. No, it's me who decided not to keep in touch with her anymore.
Oh, by the way, one thing that I remember the Dalai Lama. Do you remember, friend? I'll give you an example. When these young mothers in Arizona, these really sincere young ladies, they asked him, what's the best way to teach Buddhism to our children? What did he say? What did he say? I like it. Do you remember?
No, we don't.
Okay. Do you remember what he said?
Example.
Yeah, he says they're too young to understand words and logic and presentations. But if they see you acting Buddhist, they'll start doing it. So I think that's a good place. That's a good place to start. Okay.
Because I have to take my test on Friday night.
Do you have to, you mean?
Yeah.
You agree?
No.
What's today?
A week from tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Anybody who has some compelling reason why they can't take the final or not in the final, I don't really care. You know what I mean? If you want to take it
It'll be ready.
If you want to take it before that, I don't mind. If you have some reason, I know a lot of people might be going out of town on Christmas or something. So I have no attachment to that. I think it'd be nice to take a picture of all of this.
That would be nice.
Next week or something. Maybe so dress up next class. I'll caution the hair. So somebody bring it. You guys have a good camera?
Yeah.
You don't shave your head.
Two people bring a camera.
Everybody can bring a camera. That's all.
Cool.
I can
video it. Video. Wait. There goes my tripod.
So what is
it? Maybe we'll do it upstairs as well.
Should I just... What is that? So should I just show up on... should I just show up on Friday?
That's a 17th.
I think so. So it'll be here? No, it's Friday. I'll have to go to Amy's to take that.
Yeah,
maybe.
Okay, well, call me a couple days before. Just remind me.
Here?
I'll
call you here?
I'll be gone, and you'll be standing out there.
Oh, crying.
So, Michael, when is the prayer for you? And are we invited? Are you inviting us?
What prayer?
What?
Huh?
What?
My 10th anniversary in a couple of weeks. That's supposed to be your real most. I was thinking you're inviting the most.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
No, but let me,
now we know what you think about it.
We'll figure something out.
May we please attend?
Okay, maybe. We'll do something down in Jersey.
It's all
right.
Yeah, down in Jersey.
Why have you touched me? Yeah. What? It's kind of, okay.
Wow. You know, it's kind of